Very good. Welcome, everybody, to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. This is episode, okay, maybe you don't know.
226.
And we are talking about occupying kids while camping. The reason I chose this, and usually I end up doing this, so I'll do it this time, is I'm planning on taking the family camping. So we have booked some spots. We're going to go down into the States. We have a relatively rustic campsite booked, so we kind of know where we're going, and we're going to take some activities, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because I think this is a subject that a lot of people ask, and I think it's one that we've probably talked a little bit in the past, but it's never one that seems to get too old, because really, if you're taking other people and making sure they're entertained and occupied, it's a really big thing, right? Like everyone, if one person isn't enjoying it, nobody tends to be enjoying it that much. And I think you've experienced that, Robert.
Yeah, I've been there. And yeah, it's definitely one of those things. Anytime that you're camping or you're out in the bush or anytime, good feelings are contagious, bad feelings are contagious. The added difficulty with children or younger people in general is they tend to get bored fairly easily. And once they get bored, they start having a bad time. And once they start having a bad time, everybody starts having a bad time. Because once again, that whole mentality is very contagious. Yeah, I can hear people saying, well, you know, it's only the kids, shouldn't make that big of a deal. But you know what? It doesn't matter who or what age group. That person makes a very large impact on the group dynamic.
They certainly do. So yeah, I just went on to check, make sure we are actually streaming, and we are. Everything's going good.
So if anybody hasn't noticed yet, things are a little different tonight, but we're making it work.
Yes. For instance, there is some things that should be pulled out that is not, and yeah, that's okay. So Robert's name is not actually visible on the screen.
Yeah, don't worry about it. For our listening viewers, they'll be fine. For our viewing viewers, they know who I am. Yes. I guess a quick recap is I'm not home. As you folks can probably see behind me, I'm not at home. I don't have any of the stuff that I normally have to assist in the running of all of this. So Ben is soloing it tonight and doing a fine job, I might add.
Well, I appreciate your confidence in me. I think it's horribly misplaced. but that's
okay. You're doing fine. But yeah, so keeping entertained, your kids' activities while you're out in the woods, it helps on this one, honestly, with a little pre-planning. Don't try and run out into the woods and find something off the cuff. Not that you can't do that, don't get me wrong. It's just, it does kind of tend to be one of those things, if you have a game plan going into it, it's going to be significantly more successful than if you didn't. Unless your kids are into the outdoorsy things, like, you know what I mean? Maybe they have experience out there with your kids, Ben. All your kids have been in the woods a good deal. They would expect when they're going. Versus perhaps somebody else's kids, maybe they're not into the hobby as much. You know what I mean? Maybe they only go every other time, or maybe they're only used to doing campground camping and you want to try deep woods camping. You know, there's some things there. When you're throwing something new at them, it can be hit and miss. So when you're doing that, it helps to bring some things that are familiar, and this is where a little bit of pre-planning can help out on that. Or at least that's my opinion, Ben. What's your thoughts?
I think the pre-planning is essential, and I fixed it. Anyone who's, I feel really proud of myself right now. I brought your border out front. Yeah, so Robert is by far our expert in how to do this, and I am just struggling. Pre-planning is essential, and that's one of the things we're going through, is making sure that there's a few activities, and probably more than you expect, because you don't know how things are going to change. You get out there and the weather changes, or the environment changes, or somebody's mood changes, and you kind of need to be able to think on the fly. So having things prepared and a little ahead of yourself means that when it comes to those situations, it's going to be a bit better. So I'm going to list a handful of things, and then you guys can add some things, but games, like card games. I don't recommend board games particularly because there's pieces that get lost and it takes up a lot of room, but card games you can easily carry. Throwing games, so you can often get, we had some sandbag games where they're just literally small bags. They fit in a small pocket. When you get to the site, you just fill them with dirt. And there was a couple of rings that came with it. And you can play a game of throwing those bags and trying to get them into the rings. Things like that usually entertain kids pretty good. String. String is infinitely valuable when you're looking for entertainment value. I don't know about you, but as a kid, I made a ton of bows and arrows. and I know.
And say, this is...
But...
Sorry, what was that?
I was going to say...
No, I was going to say... You go first, then I'll back up.
I was going to say, safety-conscious people would be... You built weapons and gave your kids... Well, no. We were kids and we built weapons. And we entertained ourselves for hours.
I can remember doing that as a kid. Doing many a bow and arrow. And they never shot straight. You were using crooked arrows, so when you let them fly, they always winged off one way or the other anyway. So it was, you know, twice as dangerous, twice as fun.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say was, there's kind of a couple different aspects of this that I wanted to look at, and you're kind of leading right down this one. So there's the stuff we're bringing, which is what we said with pre-planning, and the board games and stuff like that are great. The only thing I have to add on to that is things you may want to avoid. Much like the board games you mentioned that have a lot of pieces that can get lost. A lot of people's default stuff is to bring their phones or tablets to keep their kids entertained, or even themselves, which is fine and dandy until the battery runs out, which I don't know about anybody else out there, but my kid, if they became, you know, they had the tablet for so long and then it was ripped away from them while they're already in the woods, tends to set them off worse than if they never had it to begin with. So if you're going to bring it, have a way of charging it. Like, if that is your thing, by all means, like, I don't judge, but have a battery pack, have a solar panel, be close to your vehicle, something like that, keep it charged. Because once it dies, it's probably going to trigger an even worse event than if they never had it at all, coming from experiences. You know, mileage is going to vary depending on the kids and stuff like that. But yeah, when I take Lily out, and even when I took Christiane out when she was younger, I tried to avoid electronics. Simply because they rely on batteries. And it kind of takes away from the outdoor experience was the other side of this as well. You know what I mean? The idea of generally going out there is to enjoy the area you're in. So if you're relying on your technology all the time, and we don't use technology, Ben and I are advocates for technology, we love our technology. But when you start using it, it takes away from the experience, and then once it kind of fails, then the experience around you seems so much duller.
Yeah.
Does that make any kind of sense, or am I just spiraling myself into loops here?
No, I think you're right. I mean, technology is somewhat useful and definitely has its time and place, and we use it for plant identification, for navigation, for, you know, watch a quick video or something in the evening. But yes, depending too much on it is definitely a risk. And with the kids, once you give it to them, they kind of expect to be able to use it as much as they want. And I think part of the point of getting out there is to get them away from those devices and get them to experience other things. So actually, when we mentioned this whole trip, there was an immediate back up when we mentioned that the electronics might be minimalized because where we're going would be out of the country, and therefore we'd pay roaming fees and all that. We just wanted to control the amount of data we were using. So that was our immediate assumption, is let's keep this to a minimum. So we're already actively thinking of some things to do. And one of the things we'll obviously do, and I say obviously, but maybe it's not to everyone, is to go to the dollar store and let them pick out two or three things. It could be a hula hoop, could be a little, you know, sandcastle set, anything that they can pick out that's going to be like their play thing for the weekend. They will get hours of entertainment out of that. Like, if you let them experiment with it, they will do things you never expected.
And something that I like that you included on there is you let them pick it. The thing is, if they're the ones in control of the item coming out, they're a lot more likely to stay entertained with that item because they know they had some input into it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work 100% of the time, but a lot of the time, Once again, I'm a friend of experience. If either of the girls picked something they wanted, they always said, well, it was what I picked. I mean, worst case, you can kind of use that back on them too. Oh, I don't want this. Well, that was the item you picked. You know what I mean? That was the agreement. You picked it. You had the responsibility of it. So it also gives them a little bit of responsibility. Makes them feel a little bit more grown up too. You know what I mean? That's the other thing with kids' activities is don't give them activities that kind of shut them away from everybody else. Kids, like everybody else, they want to feel included. They want to feel like they're not only useful, but they're fitting in and being a part of the group. So if you, you know, going back to the cell phones and stuff, if they're just sitting in the corner playing with that, that doesn't really make them part of the group, even if it's the family, if it's a family group activity, you'll tend to have better results once they get going. You may have worse results starting off, however. There might be some resistance there, like, oh, I don't want to play with my sisters or my brothers or whatever the heck. But you know what? Once you get past that hurdle, which I can promise you is generally simpler than other hurdles, they'll tend to get along better. Give everybody kind of a responsibility and a purpose. Make them feel as part of the group, and you're going to have a lot better off. And that's not just with a kid. That's with anybody you bring out. Unless you're just bringing a group to go out and get some, you know, adult beverages, do your thing, which is still perfectly fine. That's great. But if you're going out for an outing, if somebody wants you to take them into the woods, make them feel useful. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if they are or not. They have to feel useful to actually get some enjoyment out of that. So when you're thinking of games and activities, don't just necessarily grab things that are just for the kids. Try and find something that everybody can be a part of. And if it is a game or a toy or something like that, at least be willing to take your stab at entertaining them with that item. You know what I mean? So if it's the hula hoop, for instance, you're going to act a little goofy and try to hula hoop. You know what I mean? Get involved a little bit, get them involved. At least that's what I found for me works a lot better than just, you know, giving the kids something and saying, go play.
One of the things that I found works surprisingly well is letting them have some say in their own shelter. So if you bring a small extra tent, even if it's one you don't expect them to be able to sleep in, but it gives them that separation. And honestly, it kind of keeps the mess away from your main tent. So in this case, I think we are taking a slightly larger tent that the family is expected to sleep in. But we have a couple of small tents that we'll just probably throw in the back of the vehicle. And if they get overly bored, we can let them set up one of the small tents and they can go in there and play and entertain themselves and kind of be out of our way. That privacy and separation is sometimes really enjoyable. And what really seems to be fun is if they can sort of like know their boundaries. So you set where they can go and let them travel and tell them, like, you know, build your own little shelter, like a quick, you know, semi lean to, like, you know, when you show up, you're like, man, that offers zero shelter, but to them it does. So if they lay a couple of branches across and have a couple of like a piece of cloth or something next to it, and you know, they'll be like, oh, I built a fort, Dad. And it, you know, they get a good kick out of it. They enjoy it. They'll play and pretend that they're surviving in the woods or they're doing whatever. Right. And
the beauty of things like that is good, bad, the shelter, they're still learning skills that they can develop. Like, yeah, we all started somewhere. I can guarantee you the first shelter I built did not look anything like the shelter I could build today.
No.
You know what I mean? And somewhere in between, I can guarantee you I built shelters that were way more intricate, but completely unnecessary. There's that balance between the amount of effort you put in for the visual effect versus you just need something that functions and is warm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we all did that. Like, if you look to some of the bushcrafters that do this stuff and you see some of the shelters they build, like big U-shape apparatuses, and that's the word I'm going to use, with multiple windows and gates and different types of roofs and eating. It's like a house. Not overly functional, but we all do it. We all build that elaborate one, and then we realize, wait a second, all I really need is, and you kind of, but it's good practice for them to do it. So shelter building is always a good one. Gathering food is a great one. And so take a few minutes and identify, you know, some edible plants in the area and, you know, let them gather it up. If it's berry season and you can get some good berries, you know, or there's some berries in season is probably the better word. You know, give them a little cup and tell them to fill the cup, and then you'll make a dessert with it. They will have a blast, and you can literally keep them busy for hours that way. Or I have always had success. And you know what?
We joked about it at the start about the bow and arrows and stuff, but that is a lot of fun.
Oh no!
I mean, I wouldn't sharpen their arrows for them, but depending on the age, maybe you do. Maybe they're at that level where they want something that's a little bit more intricate, and you have the availability to do that. Or maybe they're just a young, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper kind of kid that you just want. They just want something to play with. You can literally take like an alder, slap a string around it with a relatively straight stick as an arrow, and be like, here's how you shoot a bow and arrow. You don't have to have fletchings on it or points or things like that. No, it's not going to be accurate. None of that stuff. But once again, it's developing skills. They see how wood has a springy effect when you tie it in a certain way. And, you know, eventually they'll figure out the different woods have different effects and different drynesses and the moisture content in it. Like, this is all advanced stuff that Ben and I can think about at our level and be very bad at it, but we know that it will. Ben's probably better than me, to be perfectly honest. But we know it's a thing. As we're with a kid, if you start telling them, like, oh, yeah, the moisture content of that wood is not going to be indicative to bouncing back to its natural shape. That's all, you know, straight over their head 90% of the time. But if they goofed around a little, they do know, oh, hey, this type of wood with this kind of bark makes a way better bow than this kind of wood with this kind of bark.
Yeah,
and that's just a place to start. Once again, you're giving them the stepping stones to get into things.
Well, I think you hit us.
So Danny's joined us at the comments here. I do have them up. I know for Gage, he has always enjoyed helping with the campfire, gathering wood, getting the fire started, and keeping it going. There's not a person alive that on some level doesn't enjoy a good fire. You know what I mean? Like, if you're like, oh, I hate that, granted, they haven't been traumatized by fire. As a firefighter, let me back up on this. If they haven't been traumatized by fire for some reason, everybody likes a good fire. And being involved in making that is a very primal and rewarding experience. We talked about this on our fire-making episodes and stuff like that as well. For kids, it's tenfold. You know, give them the ferro rod. Once again, depending on age and stuff like that. But, I mean, I would argue I'd even get the 4-year-old a decent-sized ferro rod and let them try it. With supervision, and let them see if they can throw some sparks. If they can throw some sparks and have decent at it, see if they can throw that into a tinder bundle. Like, you can build on it and tailor it to the individual that you're working on it, much like if you're bringing somebody new into the woods. Bringing a child into the woods, or kids in general, is no different than taking people into the woods that aren't used to being there. You start everything off at a basic level and run from there. And yeah, fire building, awesome. Like I said, anybody I take in the woods, kids included, I always try to give them something to do with fire building. And not just the firewood gathering, because that can leave a bad taste in some people's mouths. It's all they do is just gather firewood. You know what I mean? Melissa was a prime example of that. She was always kind of on firewood gathering duty for the first little while. And don't get me wrong, I did some as well, but that, to her, it always felt like that's what she was doing, just gathering the firewood. So make sure you get them involved in even laying the firewood out, the differences between tinder and kindling and, you know, burn wood, how you make a bird's nest if you want to go that route, or just the basics of, you know, you try to get light fluffy stuff that's going to create a fire better. Then you can kind of explore, well, okay, kids, what's light and fluffy? What would make a good fire started around here? Except the moose, almost like a scavenger hunt. You'll come back with some interesting things, and then you can talk about them individually. You know what I mean? There are no wrong answers. There's just better answers. Wet leaves is not going to burn as good as cattail oil, for instance. But you can explain, okay, the leaves, they're a little wet for burning right now. But if we were to dry those out, I bet you they would work really good. You know, like, there are no wrong answers. Keep kids entertained by telling, never tell them, oh, that's a dumb idea. And I'm going extreme to that. Like, as parents, I don't think we've ever told our kids, that's a stupid idea. But honestly, always keep them encouraged. Never an ounce of discouragement can lead to a pound of bitterness. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But since sometimes we are a little discouraging. But I was thinking, like, wet leaves actually are really good for repelling flies when you throw them in the fire, because they create a lot of smoke and stuff. So there are advantages to everything out there. But yeah, I have to agree with you on the fire overall. Everyone enjoys a fire, especially if you reward them by letting them roast something at the end. So,
cooking was another one I had in there as an activity. Believe it or not, yes, it's necessary, but it can be a very fun activity for kids. Kids love roasting marshmallows. They love roasting hot dogs. They love making s'mores.
Yes.
But they still equally as like making steaks and stuff like that, too. If you give them new and interesting ways to do it. Would I throw it right on a set of coals like you and I did, Ben?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Not at that level right away. As they get older, maybe you can show them that. Maybe they're really into it. But, I mean, just wrap it in a piece of tinfoil. And Steve isn't on here tonight. I was going to reference the story. No, he had some input on it because he tried this. I had taken some deer chops, and I put in a piece of tinfoil with a little seasonings and some vegetables and stuff like that, and once we got a fire going, I literally just threw the coals, covered it over, went and did stuff. You know what I mean? And at the time, he questioned a couple times, you know, is that going to burn? I'm like, it'll be what it'll be. You know what I mean? We'll see how it comes out. And honestly, it came out amazing, and that was just an experiment for me to see would it work. But kids love that stuff too. All right, let's, you know, how do you want to cook this? Because some kids love steak. Some kids love chicken. You can bring that stuff and you can cook it on a campfire with a little bit of prep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, cooking on a fire, it's a great experience. And as night comes on, obviously, it's just, it provides light, it provides entertainment, it provides food. It really does kill a lot of good time. And it's a good use of your time. It's a good bonding experience. So I love a fire. Yeah. I had a couple of other ideas I wanted to throw out to you. One of them, and I don't have this, but we bought one and we returned it, a metal detector.
I have a metal detector. I think my mother has it at the moment. She found her wedding ring with it. But yeah, metal detecting's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's the type of item you can bring, especially when you're going somewhere new or near a river or something, and walking up and down the river, you can usually find some pretty cool stuff on streams and stuff. So that's a good idea, and just exploring streams in general. But yeah, metal detector. The other thing I've been thinking about, and I've actually been looking at them, and I might, if I have time after work tomorrow, go see if I can pick one up, is gold panning.
I have never done this to the extent of a proper gold pan, but you can find them fairly inexpensive on Amazon, and I bet you it would be an amazing amount of fun. Somebody you used to work with, Meg, she's been into gold panning a little bit lately, and she's always posting pictures up, is what I'm trying to say. And she has a ton of fun with it.
Yeah.
And Meg, if you're listening, I'm not saying that you're childish, I'm saying you're a child at heart. There's a difference. It is a lot of fun. And you know what? You may not get rich doing it, but I can guarantee you the fun that you'll have in between will kind of pay for itself. Because I think a gold pan's only like $35 on Amazon. You can get the plastic one or something like that.
Yeah, they're not at expensive Amazon. Cabela's sells them. I think I've seen them in Walmart, Canadian Tire. A lot of places around here sell them because they say anywhere on the Fraser River, which is really close to me, you can get gold if you pan for it. You're not getting rich every day, but you can get two or three flakes, which for a lot of people is enough to keep the interest, right?
Yep.
And I've watched a couple of local guys, and they'll go out and they find like different types of gems or special minerals and stuff. Just neat things that, you know, it's a fun activity, and some of my daughters have picked up an interest in that stuff. So if you're going somewhere, that's a known thing where you might be able to find amethyst, or you might be able to find really good quartz or tons of other minerals and stuff. It really can, you know, kids can't find that cool when they find pretty gems. And I say kids, but you said it at heart there. Children at heart, which I think a lot of us are. I'm gonna say me and Robert are very much kids at heart.
Oh yeah, right? I'm not a good kid either, folks.
The thing is, I like people who are kids at heart because there's a joy that they have when they see something new or see something interesting. And when you meet somebody who's not a kid at heart, there's like this anger. I don't know. The anger's not the word. It's just, what is the word? You know the word.
Oh.
Cynicism?
You know what you're trying to think of. They give off kind of a funky vibe. Yeah. Like somebody out there is screaming the word that we're trying to think of.
I think cynicism is
and
not a
we're looking like fools. That's okay.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, when you see somebody with that innocent joy, it's so much better than somebody who looks at it like, ah, who cares? Yeah, they've lost the joy. They've lost the magic.
Indifference.
Indifference, yeah. So, yeah. Just sort of keep that in mind. But yeah, another thing, and I...
You want to know what's awesome? Oh, sorry, go ahead, man.
No, I'll let you do yours, and then I'll do mine.
I was just going to say real quickly, you were talking about minerals and stuff like that. If you've got a rock tumbler, remember when those were a big thing in like the early 90s, mid-90s?
We just...
That's a lot of fun, too.
We had two or three just before we moved up here. And we actually got rid of them all because we just didn't think we'd have room up here. And honestly, we're an apartment type complex. I feel like that grinding, running noise would drive my neighbors nuts. So we don't have one right now. But there are mineral or rock hounding groups around here. They have more industrial equipment and even cutting machines and all that. You can go use it. And to join those things is not that expensive, actually. It's definitely something to be considered. So, yeah, options are out there if you're into that stuff. Whether you're in an apartment or you have 50 acres of land and all the power available, rock tumblers are not super expensive. And it's a really fun thing. So I 100% agree with you. And if you can't find good rocks, even glass, like break a couple of glass bottles and you make beach glass... quote unquote.
Yep.
I mean, you can do that. Like the options are
synthesized beach glass.
It's not endless, but it's quite a lot. So that's a good one. Here's a question, and I ask because I think it's interesting, and I think you've probably done it. Just throwing rocks at targets.
Yeah. I mean, good old-fashioned fun. A slingshot is another great source of entertainment. Once again, depending on age, there's some kids I don't think I'd give a slingshot in the woods and set them loose, but there's others I would, 100%. Especially if you had some cans, you could try throwing versus the bow and arrow versus the slingshot.
I used to take, and I know environmentally somebody's going to complain about this one, but we used to take like a pop bottle and pretend it was a boat. We toss it out into the ocean or the lake and shoot it with pellet guns and rocks and see if you could sink it or just hit it. And we generally cleaned up our mess, but it's hard to get 100% of it. But man, that would entertain four or five kids for days. Like one pop bottle, trying to sink a pop bottle with a rock, you're there all day for days.
No, entirely true. Anything like that. It's just fun. Stuff they're not going to get to do at home. Like, make the outdoors an experience that's joyous to things they're not going to get to do at home. Make it new. Make it interesting. Think outside the box. What do you want to do when you go out in the woods? I'm sure your kids will be much the same. Trust me, kids don't fall from the tree. Or the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Kids shouldn't fall out of trees.
Kids do fall out of trees.
They do, but they shouldn't.
Well, I heard something a little while ago, whether you agree with the guy who said it or not, it doesn't really matter. What they said, though, was kids grow and learn the most when they're doing dangerous things safely. And
Melissa, and I'm, if I had been home, I would have got her included on this episode, but she has a really good presentation on risk-reward benefits.
Yeah.
There has to be some sort of, when there's some sort of risk, the rewards can sometimes be greater, but you have to weigh out, is the risk overpowering the reward? You know what I mean? Like, don't let your kids walk along the rail off the bridge because the reward is basically just being able to say they did it.
You know what I mean? If they fall off, I could die. That's not a good risk reward. But perhaps maybe climbing that tree and building, you know, up to a reasonable height.
Yeah.
It's, you know, hand-eye coordination, balance, dexterity. Like, everything has to be tempered with a little bit of common sense. And I know that's getting rarer and rarer in these days. But that's kind of the reality.
I mean, I might not be the most athletic person you've ever met. And I know that's shocking to everyone that's watching and anyone who's ever met me. But I can still easily hop up a river from rock to rock like it's nothing. And I've met so many people who play hockey, who play soccer, who couldn't cross a river to save their lives. So, but
I'm going
to
be back in 1 second, Ben, for whatever reason my work phone is going off. Give me like 1 second, man.
What I'm saying is I grew up jumping around rocks and climbing up rivers and climbing up rocks and doing things that maybe, you know, there was a risk. There was always a risk. I could fall into the river. I could break an arm. I could, but I got skilled at it. I got used to doing it. And I think it was a activity that was worthwhile doing that. And there's the thing, like, yes, there is a risk to it, but I think doing that, it hones skills that last pretty well a lifetime. And letting yourself have those opportunities and letting your kids have those opportunities is just great. And I think a fear that a lot of people have, and this is what I hear a lot, and when Robert comes back, I'll bring it back because he may miss the statement, but I hear too many people, in my opinion, say, I would love to go camping, but the kids are too small. Now, I don't know what too small is because my kids have camped since day one. And if we've never thought they were too small, and I don't understand the concept, but it's there. People are like, oh, they're only one, or they're only two, or they're only 10. I can't take them camping. It's not safe. It's never going to be perfect, but the earlier they get it, the better it's going to be because they're used to it. If they grow up doing it their whole lives, they don't think, oh, it's a tent, oh, horrible. or at least less so. Yeah, oh, I hear something.
It's me, I ran back.
You're back. Congrats.
I am. I apologize about that, folks. I am kind of on a work trip, so I expected to answer the phone.
I was just saying, like, one of the things I got to, and controversial, I'm sure, is how young is too young to take your kids. And I think you, I know you're on the same page as me. There is no too young age.
Once again, it's that risk-reward factor. We did figure out you were the youngest, though, when we went.
But
by a couple months.
It wasn't necessarily either first times with a child.
No.
Right?
And that's the thing. We tempered it with our own experience. It was the first time for me going out with a child that young. I'm not going to lie. I mean, Christiane was 80. Maybe even older first time we went out.
But the thing is, when you start them off young, I think they get used to it. And when they have these opportunities growing up, and this is the important thing to say, like when, just as you were leaving, I was saying, like, my ability to run up a river and hop from rocks and climb rocks, even though I might not be the most athletic, the most thin, the most, you know, strongest person, I'm really good at it. And I can usually compete with almost anyone. It's because I did it from a young age. And that's the thing, is letting your kids get out there and try these things. Letting them practice cutting with a knife while supervised means that later on, they've already built those skills. And if you see somebody who's never touched a knife by the time they're 20, it's a much harder skill to pick up because you never got fine motor skills growing up. If you don't teach kids fine motor skills young, they don't get them easier when they're older. It's the more you practice.
No, I've seen something before. You are most receptive of learning, I think, between the ages of 5 and 12. Now, once again, this is a stat that I'm getting off one of Mel's things, and I could be completely off on this, but it's a relatively young age when you are most susceptible to learning basic skills. And I'm not talking advanced skills, like, you know, neurological surgery or anything like that, but your basic motor skills, the fine skills that are going to set you up for, you know, a lot of stuff in life. You learn those at a really early age. If you don't flex those muscles, so to speak, those skills may not be lost, but you're going to have a much more difficult time to learn those later on. Prime examples like learning the second language. You will learn a second language earlier at a younger age, or sorry, easier at a younger age than I would now. You know what I mean? For me to go and learn a second language now, it's going to take some doing.
Yeah.
As where if you're younger, generally you can kind of pick it up relatively quick considering.
Oh, man. My kids will pick up a second language way earlier than I will. More quicker. But I was thinking, and you've seen this. I've seen it in various things, but you see kids who learn to drive dirt bikes at like ages 3 and 4 and 5. Like I've seen some pretty small kids, like kids, I'm like, man, they're walking. It's impressive. And then you see them on a dirt bike and they're zipping around and they're doing power turns. And honestly, by the age of 5 and 6, they're doing things on a motorcycle that me and you wouldn't even try. Right?
Yeah, Steve, I probably do have a lot of echo. It just happens to be the room I'm sitting in. I'm not at home. I'm away on a work trip. It is probably 100% my setup here, buddy. I actually mentioned a story about you earlier. Yeah, and sorry, anyway, I was just wondering what I'm talking about. Steve's joining us in the comments here. Remember how I said earlier I was hoping Steve's here about the cooking experience? This is the Steve we're talking about. But get back to your point. I agree completely. I started riding a motorcycle when I was about 3. I was riding a motorcycle before I took the training wheels off my pedal bike for a couple of years. You know, at least 2 years. I don't think I took the training wheels off my bicycle until like 6 or something. Well, I had a motorcycle. Why would I pedal?
Why would I pedal when I could just hit the throttle? But no,
and that's kind of what it came up to. But
I've seen kids skiing. Like I've been down ski. I learned to ski at a relatively young age, but then I ended up on a slope with like a 3-year-old, and the 3-year-old's leaning back and touching the back of her skis and doing all kinds of weird things. And I'm like, man, I am just trying to stay up on this trail, and you're doing this. Like, it's kind of freaky. So learn skills at a young age. Tends to, you know, they stick with you. And I say this at work way out more often than you would think, that the best skills I learned for my job, I have oftentimes attribute to kindergarten. Like, I used to do a lot of planning for aircraft type work, and one of the things was these drawings that would be like, you know, changes. So we'd have a change document that would change the drawing. And I did what I call arts and crafts. I would cut out the shapes and put in, and I'd draw things on it to make the drawing make sense. Those are skills I learned in kindergarten, and I still use them to today. So if you learn how to do basic carving, if you learn how to make basic fire, if you learn how to navigate in the woods at a young age, when you hit 20, 30, 40, it's all in second nature. You don't even think about it. It's instinct. But it's not instinct. It's learned behavior, but learned at such a young age, you can't even, you know, it doesn't even register that you've thought about it.
Yeah, and much like the driving and stuff like that, it's all the same. And I guess that's what this whole episode is about, is giving me ideas to keep your kids entertained, but to set them up better for life is kind of what it's evolved into. Because, once again, a lot of the skills you're going to learn out there in the woods, just like Ben said, they're going to develop into stuff that they could potentially use down the road. Ben's kindergarten skills helped him work on aircrafts. You never know what the activities you're teaching your children to do in the woods could benefit them in the future in some way. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a far throw either.
No. The skills that I see when somebody tries to learn something as an adult, sometimes it's skills that I don't even think of, and it's really hard for me to articulate that to somebody who wouldn't, you know, instinctively know it. But it's not an instinct, it's a learned behavior, but learned at such a young age. So when, like you said, when you're walking through the woods and someone says, which way is out, and you just can point, it's because you've been doing it for so long that you now know to keep mentally track of which way is out. But when you're new and you have to actively do that, that takes a lot of your attention. So now you've given it up. It's not part of something that's regulated to your, you know, your subconscious. It's something that your conscious has to do, and your conscious can only do so much.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, that's easily proved from people that travel a lot. I mean, like drive a car.
Yeah.
People, a prime example for here, because you'll know this area too. There's a lot of people that say they hate to drive in Halifax. The only reason they hate to drive in Halifax is because they haven't done it a lot. You know what I mean? It's a big city. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of moving parts. But once you get used to that, it's really not that bad. You know what I mean? And that's the same as any of these skills you're going to take out of the woods, I should say. Not take into the woods, take out of the woods. And another good thing to keep in mind, just to try and get this point out before I completely forget about it, is I always try to make any of the adventures out there seem like a freedom. Because that's what it means to me. That's what I like to pass on to other people. That's what I like to pass on to my kids. The woods is freedom. And to this point, and I had this note up here, why I'm telling this story, my youngest, Lily, most of you folks have seen her pop in a podcast at some point in our career here. She's got the nickname when she was a little younger as Little Robert, because anytime she would get frustrated or upset or something like that, she'd say, oh, I want to go to the woods. Which was always my thing. If I felt overwhelmed, frustrated, irritated, or just tired out in general, I always told Mel, like, I need a trip to the woods. You know what I mean? I need to reset. We talked about this in past episodes. I encourage you to go listen to it. But that's the exact mentality I wanted my kids to have. It should be a freedom. Because when you go to the woods, there is nothing that is quite as freeing as having your complete independence over there. And any of these activities that we talked about here tonight that are going to build on your child's skills and development and their independence while they're in the woods is going to give them that much more of a feeling of freedom. And once they learn what that feeling of freedom is out in the woods, it's way easier to pull that back into your quote-unquote real life. You know what I mean? You may be able to take little aspects of that and capture little fleeting graphs of that freeing feeling, and it makes your life better. It really does. You know what I mean? I'm a true advocate that says the joys you can have in the woods are going to make your life better on the day-to-day. And to me, it just happens to be the woods. Other people have different, you know, different things that's true for. Could be music, could be swimming, could be pedal biking, whatever. But for me, it's outside, outdoors in the woods.
Yeah. I had a friend tell me today, their thing is sitting on a beach, watching the waves and watching the people. Right? Our thing is walking through the woods. Somebody might be going to a church. We're not knocking whatever you bring your peace, but you need to find that peace and get to it. You know, what brings one person peace doesn't bring another person peace. And I think if you try to push that on somebody, you'll lose them. And it's the sort of the same thing with your kids. In the end, they may not take to the woods, but giving them those experiences early on and giving them a good experience by entertaining them, letting them have fun, letting them explore, will increase the chances that that's where they find their peace. Because honestly, there's other places that are probably not as great to find your peace in. And so finding those healthy outlets is what I would highly encourage you guys to do with your kids. And I would suggest that there isn't a better one than enjoying the outdoors, right? There are other ones.
I mean,
it's obviously the best.
There are other ones, but the outdoors relatively is cheaper than a lot of them. I mean, even a day trip, you don't necessarily have to go camping for the night. If you don't, I know there's a lot of people in the situation where they can't afford the tent and the sleeping bags for a family outing and stuff like that. That's fine. Find a nice day park or a walking park or something like that. Just go on a day trip. Same kind of things. There's a lot of them that have small spots where you can stop and make campfires and, you know, roast a few marshmallows or something like that. You can still go out and enjoy it and not spend a lot of money. Literally just potentially the cost of getting into this place. And I'm thinking like the Cape Breton Highlands, you got to pay a fee to go in and all that stuff, which is still not that much. In comparison to like buying a tent, the sleeping bags, the sleeping pads, the pillows, you know, that you can. We have talked about this in the past, where you can spend a lot of money on outdoors gear, or you cannot spend a lot of money on outdoors gear. So it's not just for people that have all the fancy gear. You don't need a whole lot to get out in the woods and start enjoying it. Literally just walk out behind your house if you are lucky enough to have some wood behind your house. And you don't have to go in a view of your home. You can go in there, you can learn the basics of shelter building, and your kids can too. They can learn the basics of tree identification. They can learn tenders and all these activities that we just talked about through this entire episode. You don't have to go 20 miles into the woods where never a soul to be seen again, though that is kind of cool. Don't get me wrong, there is something about that too, but it's not required.
But there are programs, and there are things you can do to assist yourself in that. So if this is what you want to get into and you've never done it, there are free or near free programs that you can sign up for. For instance, this is an example. It's not all encompassing. I think I've heard of places that will actually loan you tents if you want to try that. I know there's libraries that will loan you things like snowshoes and hiking poles. So there are places you can go to get a lot of this for free. You return it, you get your money back if there's a deposit. I just looked into Washington. I know it's not Canada, but hey, we're an international group. $30 gets your discovery pass to go to all the backwoods roads in Washington pretty well. Some of their backwoods campsites are like $18 a night. Thrift stores, you can usually find a tent or two in thrift stores, as well as sleeping bags, right? If you don't have a sleeping bag,
funny enough, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but funny enough, Mel just sent me a link on this a couple of days ago. Nova Scotia Parks Learn to Camp, it's a Facebook page, and if you're in Nova Scotia, it's around the Five Island Provincial Parks this time, but that's exactly what they're doing. They're lending out gear and things like that, so you can try doing an outing without having to buy any of this stuff. I don't know if there's a fee or anything involved there. Like, I only know the very basics of it, unfortunately. It is, she sent it to me while I was up here, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But I do know if you go on the old Facebook and search up Nova Scotia Parks Learn to Camp, you'll get the information there.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. There are options out there. A lot of the parks do similar things. A lot of local groups that are trying to convince people to get into their hobbies and stuff, they have open weekends where they'll take you out. So if you look some of these stuff up, there's something that you're interested in. I have used this method for so much stuff. It's unbelievable. Facebook. I know some people think Facebook's old and dead, but honestly, I've tried a few other platforms. Nothing really compares. Go in, type what you're interested in, and you will find about 50, 60 local pages for almost any subject you can find. Think of. Type in bushcraft, you'll find it. Type in rock hounds, you will find it. Type in dual sport motorcycles, you'll find it. Type in you name it, whatever you want, you're going to find it. If you're into crafting, if you type it in, find the groups, meet the groups, post what you need. Surprisingly, Atlantic Bushcraft, or not that, Nova Scotia Bushcraft actually had a thing in there for a while. Post what you need. And if anyone in the group had an extra one, they would oftentimes give it to you or sell it to you very cheap because, you know, we all gather way more gear than we need, right? So there's options. Like, don't be afraid to try it. And a lot of people are so excited to share their passion, they'll loan you the gear for a night. They'll take you out, right? And they'll go
for sure. I mean, if somebody was to ask me to lend them some gear to go in the woods, guaranteed, if I was home, within 15 minutes, I could find everything you need to go for a camping adventure. Would it be my best stuff?
Absolutely.
Probably not until I got to know you a little better, but it is definitely usable stuff that's going to get you out there and you're going to have the experience.
But you, not only that, like, if you were available, most likely you'd take them.
Yeah, I was going to say, and it's an excuse for me to go out. I'll be like, can I come?
You want to go camping? You need someone to help you? I'll show you how to set up the tent. I'll make sure you got a good
You need a tour guide. Where are we going?
Right? Free guide, right? But no, there are plenty of people that will do that stuff for you. So, it's really has worked well for me. I've met some of the most amazing people using this. I met Robert this way. I met a buddy Chris. I met Steve. there's a ton of people I've met this way. Jeremy from, you know, Lone Wolf 902.
Lone Wolf 902, for anybody that hasn't checked him out yet.
I mean, great channel. I love his older stuff. Some of his newer stuff is pretty good now. I'm watching it again. He caters to his audience. So if you like it, it's because that's what he's working hard for, right? Obviously, my tastes have not always agreed, but that doesn't mean he doesn't do great stuff. He does. And he's really into it. He really likes to share his passion. And he, you know, I contacted him. He's like, yeah, I won't interview with you, but I'll go camping with you. So, you know, those guys are looking for that stuff, right? Old Bastard. Sean takes a lot of people out.
Yeah. Mark Young, for the longest time, he used to show up everywhere. You know what I mean? I see he's back to making videos again, too. So.
Yeah. So
anyway, trying to somehow get off the topic of children here, and I guess we're up at 10 o'clock anyway, so we're kind of signing off.
Yeah.
That was our, you know, our end chat ramble as per the normal.
I think we got it off topic, but it had a point, and the point was, if you don't know how to do it, you're not... you don't have the equipment and you want to get your kids out there, there are other people that will join you and help you out with that if you really want to try that. There are plenty of avenues to get out there. But I think you hit it well on the spot too. It doesn't have to be an overnight trip. It can be a local trip. It can be somewhere you can get to on a bus or somewhere you can drive easily. And there's plenty. Everywhere I've been has green spaces dedicated to this type of stuff where you can, you know, just hang out in a park or near a river. So, yeah. Anyways, like you said, it is late and we need to get going. But as always, you know, get out there and have some fun.
Night, everybody. We'll catch you next week. Hopefully a little more interesting setup. If not, catch you back here in the red quarter.